Welcome back to another episode of Dentistry's Growing with Grace podcast. Join Grace and her guest of the week as they discuss lessons learned in the industry and explore unique insights into ethical growth.
Hello, welcome back to Dentistry's Growing with Grace. I'm very excited to have my friend Megan with me today. Today we're talking about dental employees. We're talking about retention and building a thriving team. We're also going to unveil some of the things we've seen in the dental profession that have dental team members leaving the profession. And Megan, you actually were in the dental profession. Tell me a little bit about your experience in dentistry.
So I started right in high school, actually, at the age of 18 in New York. I started as a pediatric dental assistant, and then I moved to North Carolina where I got married and quickly moved into dental assisting, and then I moved into front desk, which led to consulting, which then led to management. So I have been everything but the hygienist and the doctor at some point in my dental career.
Oh, cool. Okay. How long were you in dentistry?
I was in dentistry for 14 years.
Wow. You look young, by the way.
Thank you. That's what happens when you start young. That becomes your whole life.
Yep. Yep. And that becomes your identity, no pun intended. But that becomes your identity is you're a dental professional, and it's a small profession. It's small. Everyone's connected. Everyone seems to kind of know everyone, which can be tough. I know you have left the dental profession, and it's bold, but we're going to talk about that today. So tell me, I know you've had a lot of different experiences with dental employers. I'm sure you've had some great ones. I'm sure you've had some challenging ones. And what I'd love to do is just kind of highlight some of the good experiences you've had and some of the experiences that have had you kind of running for the hills. And that way our dentist audience, our audience of dentists, can take some of this information in, and it's either going to confirm that they're doing the right thing and leading the right way, or that they maybe have some things to change before it's too late, before they don't have a team, right? So why did you leave the dental profession?
I left the dental profession because I'm sure we've all heard the term burnt out. I'm sure we can all relate to that no matter what position you're in. Every position has their stresses and their greatness that go with it. For the back half of my 14 years, I was in management. And management is a tough role sometimes. You are playing the advocate for your patients with their insurance. You're handling all those disputes. You are the punching bag sometimes for the dentist, even though they don't know that they're doing it. They want to confide everything from their workday to their manager. And sometimes we take on a lot. And then we're also, I would like to say, the counselors for the rest of the staff. So we're dealing with staff issues, and you know, this is a mainly woman-dominated field. And there's a lot of what I say, catfights, right? No, it's just the way the field is. So you're helping people get along, you're helping oversee every part of the practice. And sometimes when you come home, you've given everything to your job and you come home with nothing and you're tired. And
yeah.
I think that's when people get burnt out, because as a manager, we're kind of like an octopus, right? We have like 8 different arms going on. We're trying to juggle every aspect of the practice. And it can be hard and it can be stressful.
And what you call catfights, I think in dentistry, it naturally lends to a power struggle. And the reason I say this is because, well, I've worked in a practice before I started Identity Dental Marketing in 2009. I worked as a marketing director for a 2-location practice in Illinois for about a year and a half. And so I've had some of these experiences, which gives me actually a very different perspective when I'm doing marketing for dentists. I know it's got to be the right type of patient. It's got to actually convert. Like, you've got to have a connection between who you are internally and who you are in your marketing, right? And so I love that I've had that experience. It really laid a strong foundation for my career. And I also love that I've had the experience with management and the hygiene department and the dental assistants and the dentists, and you get all of these different components. And it's really hard because you don't have a clear pecking order, specifically between what I've seen, correct me if I'm wrong, what I've seen is office managers and hygienists often bat heads, like they are in confrontation over power because the hygienist is like, well, I'm a provider, I'm a clinician, which is true. Which is true, right? And so you want some autonomy in that role. You want to be able to provide treatment to your standards because you are a clinician in some respect. But the office manager is being held responsible for operations and patient communication and protocol. And so there aren't clear lines of power in a practice in most situations. And this is what leads to, in my opinion, constant chaos. It's like, what authority, what areas of the practice as an office manager do I have authority over? And that has to be very clearly labeled. And what I've seen is, even when it is clearly labeled, if it's not enforced by the owners, then you run into another, you have like a almost like a divorced parent vibe, where if dad says no, I'm going to go to mom. If mom says no, I'm going to go to dad. I'm not going to tell mom that I went to dad. And so you're doing what you need to do to get authorization for what you want. And it's just the perfect storm.
It is a perfect storm of, I've also seen the other side too, where there are times too, where you have office managers who came straight out of college with a degree, but haven't necessarily worked on the clinical side of things. And so the hygienist thinks that they are working in that setting. They've worked there before. So why should you come and overthrow not only my degree, but I've also worked in the clinical setting. So why do you get to become my manager? I've seen a lot of that too in other practices. And it's hard, but you're right. You know, the doctor says, I need you to do this. Well, then the hygienist goes and pulls him aside and says, well, why that? And then he gives a different answer. And then now you're in the middle of this triangle of just the perfect storm. And you just sometimes, it tires you out.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Another thing I've seen is there are a lot of husband, wife owners. That's a whole, we could do a whole podcast on that.
It could be a whole nother series on husband and wife situations.
And I think it's either the best thing that could happen to a practice or the worst. Yeah. I've seen practices where I go, oh my goodness, if you take doctor's wife out of this equation, it all falls apart. She's holding it together. And she is the true leader, owner of this team. And she is the core. And then I've also seen, oh my goodness, if doctor's wife would just get out of the way, we could all do our job, but she's not really invested in the operations and isn't qualified maybe. And it can be the best or the worst thing in a practice. And I think the determining factor of that is, are there very clear lines of what does doctor manage, what area is doctor's, and what area is spouse. And it has to be defined. I work with my husband very hard. It's very hard.
I work with mine too, because we own a renovation company. And there are separate things where I know that there are things that I'm not meddling in. I'm not doing it. And he also knows that there's things that he's not going to meddle in either, because it's just the way it is. But it becomes a double-edged sword for most of the time. You have to be careful.
It's hard. And so I've gotten to the point where I know that I need my husband in the job. I think he brings tremendous value and he's obviously invested in our success, but I need him in roles and responsibilities that don't involve me at all. I don't want to work with him. So, and he, I'm sure, does not want to work with me, because there's naturally going to be a power struggle there. So it's like, here's your area, I'm going to stay out. Here's my area, you're going to stay out. And there's one area that overlaps right now, and I don't like it. So I'm going to change that. And I don't like it. That happened over time where, okay, you're doing this thing and then you're handing it off to me. And it's, we're going to change this because you got to put your marriage first. So it's a challenge. So what advice I know that you have left the dental profession at this point. And I know that you've had a lot of really difficult experiences. And as anyone who's listening to this, we've all been there, right?
All done that.
Yeah. So what would you recommend? Like, what would your advice be to a practice owner if they're at this point where they're like, if only I could solidify this team, if only I could get buy-in from this team, if only I can get my team to function. I don't even want to say like a family, because how many families are dysfunctional?
Correct.
You know, how can I get us to function in harmony? Right.
I think the biggest mistakes dentists do, and I've seen this, and I think this is like the one thing that could make or break a team and make it just absolutely fantastic, is when dentists reward team members for bad behaviors, but there's no incentives for good behaviors. I cannot say this to the dental gods above enough. The biggest thing that breaks your staff is when you have a team member who comes in late, doesn't follow the rules, X, Y, and Z, but they are not getting in trouble where the rest of the group is showing up early, doing what they're supposed to, doing their clinical notes, flipping over, making sure we're ready for the next day. When they see other team members getting treated the same way that the team members that are doing what they're supposed to be doing, they are quick to flee the heavens up on the hills. Like, yeah, they're gone, because there's no incentive for good behavior. So the biggest thing I can say is everybody needs to be held to the same level. If there's expectations, I'm very forgiving. 1, 2, 3 strikes, right? I'm more than happy to accommodate. If there's circumstances that are out of our control, we'll work with it. We'll address it as an individual. But if there is a habitual situation, why would the employee that shows up 30 minutes early want to continue when one employee shows up 2 minutes before a patient walks in the front door? They don't want to, because what's the point? There's no point to that. So holding everybody to the same standards,
let's be honest here. Like, what are the standards? What time do you want me here in the morning? If you have someone showing up 2 minutes before a patient, is that appropriate? Is that the standard? How many dental offices don't have a handbook? They don't have their expectations in writing of who are we? What are our core values? What do we stand for? And then when people break those core values, or they show indications that they don't embrace the same core values, are we having hard conversations? Are we able to have hard conversations? And it's funny, because this week I had a really great conversation with one of my team members, and he said, what's it going to take for me to get to the next level here and earn more money? And my answer, I thought about it for a second. I'm like, what a good question. I said, the difference between a lower level employee and a higher level employee is their ability to have difficult conversations.
Yeah.
And that is everything. Who's the person who is issuing write-ups, but in a compassionate way, where it's meant to drive positive change, not completely demoralize a person? Because you still need to address the issue.
Absolutely.
But you've got to do it in a way where you can get positive change.
Absolutely. I also think I am huge as a manager. I loved monthly one-on-ones with my staff, just to go over what am I doing that maybe I could improve on? Because it's not all about, I think there's also a conception that with a manager, like, we are it, like, we're perfect. We are not perfect. There is always going to be something, and I can assure you that, always something that you can improve on. Always. You are never going to hit the top of the top. It's not going to happen. So having those one-on-one conversations and saying, what this month, did I not do something that great? Can I work on something? At the same time, like, this is what I saw. You're doing this great. You're killing it with flipping over rooms in time and getting patients seated. But we could also kind of work on this too. And I feel like dentists sometimes don't want to have those hard conversations, because we're also in a volatile time where every state is different. But here, where I'm in North Carolina, we're having a bit of a shortage right now, and dentists don't want to lose their employees. So they're kind of putting up with some really horrible things. But in turn, your good employees are scooting to the next one down the road, because
you're rewarding the bad behavior, which we can't do. Right. Yeah. I agree. I agree 100% with that. It's actually one of my mantras that I say all the time. Don't reward bad behavior. Don't reward. I say it with my kids. I say it with my team, and I say it with my clients. And this opens up a totally different conversation, but a fun one is that horrible patient that you all dread seeing because they're abusive or inappropriate. You've got to let them go too, because you're torturing your team when you make them tolerate something, someone who's unprofessional, unappreciative, late, doesn't want to pay their bill. That's another reason why you're losing good employees, is because you're keeping bad patients. And everyone thinks, oh, well, if I fire the patient, I'm going to have a bad review and that's the end of the world. You've got to be part of being in business is recognizing some people aren't going to be for you. And that's okay. And as long as you have professionalism around those conversations, but I also don't believe in playing games with people. I don't believe in the let's double charge them so they go somewhere else. Well, no, then your bad review is going to be that you overcharge people. And so I've heard a lot of consultants say that that's what you should do to terminate relationships is to increase your fees. And I'm like, no.
It's illegal in some states too. You cannot do that.
Depends on if you're in network with insurances and what you're doing. Yes. But the best policy is to learn how to have difficult conversations and be really honest, because your team's going to appreciate it. Your patients, if they're not mentally well, they may not appreciate it, but they're going to have to deal with it. And your team does not deserve to come to a workplace that they dread, that has this overwhelming negative looming feeling when you walk in. That you can feel the energy of a team.
Absolutely.
You can feel it. So whether you are on with patients and you talk like this when they walk in the door, but you secretly hate your assistant because she doesn't know how to take an impression. As a patient, I can feel that relationship.
I can feel it.
And if you don't trust your dental assistant, guess what? As a patient, I don't trust your dental assistant. Yeah. So let's talk about what actually led to this podcast today. You saw a social media post, and we're friends. You texted it to me and I'm like, we got to talk about this.
So I saw a post and it basically was a dentist saying that his dental assistant is great. Shows up on time, hard worker, great with the patients. And for the podcast, we'll just say that she can do 500 things. He didn't necessarily say what it was, but could do 500 things. And out of that 500 things, she can do 499 of them perfectly. But there was one thing that she just couldn't do very well. And he kind of came on there and like put her down and trashed her and didn't say any names, but
his name was on it. So you could,
his name was on it. So we all know who that was.
Yeah. We can deduce who you're passively aggressively talking about in a group of tens of thousands of dental professionals.
Correct. So it led me to think of, well, gee, Mr. So-and-so, are you perfect at everything that you do in your practice as well? Because that is not a realistic expectation. Setting realistic expectations for your employee in your practice is what is going to make you successful. And if you have unrealistic expectations, you're going to go through employees constantly because no one
is going to fight you on this. I'm going to fight you on this.
And
this.
Oh no.
Yeah. No, this is why I wanted you on the podcast, because this is going to get really good.
Okay.
So this is what I think. Okay. I think he has every right to want those 500 things. Okay. And it's probably not 500. It's probably
Whatever.
20, right? Right. Okay. They take so long, like 40 minutes, and they look like crap.
Yeah. The assistant really sucks at taking.
Sucks at temps. Yeah. Those are his words. Oh, it was anonymous. Never mind. I'm glad it was anonymous.
It was. You're right. As we are looking at it. So
I take it back. Everything I said. Okay. So really, really sucks at temps. Okay. How much of the business is making temps for an assistant? Like what percentage of your day is making temps?
Not very much, because most of the time, in my experience, depending on how seasoned the dentist is, all depends if you have a CEREC or not too. If a dentist is using a CEREC, you're not doing temps. I would probably only say 10 or 15%, depending on how, at least in my experience, there were only maybe two crown appointments a day.
Yeah. So he goes on to say, I've tried many times to train her and show her different techniques and nothing is clicking. She has 3 years of experience, has been with me for almost 3 months with no improvement. She's a decent assistant otherwise and has been a quick learner in other areas. So he's not totally bashing her. He's like, what should we do? What can I do to help her get better? I'm at a loss. So he's asking his colleagues confidentially, which I applaud. I don't think you should throw anyone's name under the bus. What do I do? And I'm sure of the however many comments, some people said, send her to this course, send her to that, have her do this, have her do that. He might not be very good at teaching. That might be part of it. But I will tell you, Megan, and our audience, I had some dental work done and my temp was so bad that it didn't last a day. I had to go back a bunch of times for my appointment. The temp was so bad that the final restoration didn't fit. So then I had to come back again. I ended up having 4 multiple hour appointments because the assistant's temp wasn't good. Her impression wasn't good. She was peeling off different pieces and clumps, and you can tell that she wasn't good at what she was doing. And the doctor completely left the room. And she took one of her tools and she was adjusting things on my tooth. And I was sitting there panicking because I'm like, what is happening?
Face is panicking.
I love the dentist. She's very sweet, but I can't afford to go for 4 appointments when I know the dentist down the street that has a Sarah can get it done in 1. And my time is so valuable. And so for me, I'm going to pick a higher tech practice, even though I love that doctor. And I know I'm just upsetting a lot of people right now with truth, but that's where we're headed. And you've got to look at the whole picture. You've got to look at everything. But this is, now I'm going to say the most offensive thing I've probably ever said on the podcast, but the reason dentists are really struggling as leaders is because they're not confident decision makers. Why do you need to ask a group of 30,000 colleagues what you should do? They don't know the employee. They don't know how much value she brings you. Get a dental consultant that gets to know you and your situation and can help you on verbal strategies, because what this person is lacking is the ability to have hard conversations. It's the ability to confront, the ability to come up with solutions, give it a timeline, and then decide if it's that important to you or not. So either take your own temps, try one more training program, or fire the girl. But what are you going to do? Take a poll online as to how many people think you should fire her or not? Like, I think it's ridiculous.
The other flip side that he didn't say that I would be interested to know too is, if you say, I need you to improve on this, but those 3 months that he gave her, he himself did not do any training and he did not send her to training. How can you improve on something if you're not having the proper training to improve on it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if he's going to post this, because he didn't really quite say from what I got on there, if he actually did train her, but
he did say, he said, I haven't seen her progress at all. Like, I've tried showing her,
So maybe that's a him problem too. I say that very lightly. Like, it could be because some people, I am not a teacher. Like, I can't teach my kids anything. I'm just gonna be real here as a mom. Like, not my forte, folks, not my forte. I can show you in the dental world, not half bad. I'd like to say I've done pretty well in my life, but there are some dentists who they are so good at what they do, but the transfer side of teaching someone does not come across how well they actually do something. So therefore, that wasn't the best way for her to go about learning, rather than going signing her up for a course. Now, if you sign
up. Oh, and let's face it, right? Clinical chair time is the only time that matters. Training my team or reviewing my marketing or paying my bills.
Equally as important.
That matters as much as revenue driving chair time, right? So everything else gets backburnered.
Yes.
And I'm not saying this doctor, I don't even know who this doctor is, but it could be that he hasn't really said, okay, we're going to do a training course on how to make a 10. I'm going to make one, then you're going to make one. I'm going to make one, then you're going to make one. Then you're going to make 5. And I'm going to score them and I'm going to give you critical feedback on what you could have done better. He probably doesn't quote, have the time to do that because it's not chair time. I will just say this for everyone listening, okay? I do practice what I preach. I spend at least minimum hour a day of every one of my days that is not revenue producing activity to train my team members. It is my top priority is training my team. And I know as a dentist, you have clinical work to do, but you can carve out time for these things, or you can send your team to get the training elsewhere. And then you can elevate your expectations for them. And listen, if we were in an environment where employees were a dime a dozen, especially dental employees, and we had to pick from all of these people, we could say, you got 90 days to figure this out. But the reason this is even a topic is because people are leaving dentistry. There are new people joining and it'll flip. It'll become what I call an employer's market in a couple of years. It'll flip. But where we're at right now is in dentistry, it's an employee's market. So you need to be patient. You need to be kind. You should do those things anyways. But this is a really good time for dentists to refine their leadership skills. And you can do this by going to a course. You could do this by listening to podcasts like this one. You could do this by reading a book, a business book, a leadership book. I have read a book called, it's by Marcia Reynolds, and it's called The Discomfort Zone. And it's a great book about having difficult conversations, having the ability to confront people without getting hung up on your emotions. And I'm a big advocate of Eating the Frog, which is a Simon Sinek book. It just means you have the most difficult conversations at the beginning of the day. So they're not weighing you down. You're not putting them off, because if you put off those difficult conversations, they turn into resentments and they turn into microaggressions and they turn into broken relationships. And so I guess I'm going to leave it with this. My biggest advice for a dental leader is, one, get confident in your leadership skills so you don't have to turn to either this is a fake post to drum up communication, or somebody really is that insecure in their leadership skills that they don't know that their colleagues are going to decide if they hire, if they fire or keep somebody, which is kind of sad. And so get confident in your leadership skills, have those difficult conversations with compassion. If we're also in an environment where people are so sensitive. If you go to a dental assistant and you say, your temps aren't really cutting it, what can we do here? And they're crying and dramatic. They're probably not your person.
No,
that's not your person. And so if you're dealing with somebody who's what I call emotionally manipulative, that they use tears every time they need to get their way, that's going to put a lot of strain on your team too. You've got to dodge that. You've got to get away from that. But what advice would you give to the dentist looking to build and keep a thriving team?
Right off the gate, setting your expectations, I think, is great for everybody. I think everybody's so hung-go nowadays just to hire someone that we kind of let a lot of stuff fall to the wayside. So expectations, that way we're all on the same page when we start. There's no surprises. Being kind and compassionate is another big one. Another thing too that I feel is big is show your face more too. So after you get done with the procedure, don't go hide in your office and become like a little recluse sometimes, because I see that a lot too. Be friendly. Ask, you know, if there's an assistant flipping over a room and you have a minute, ask how their day is going, right? That means so much to the back sometimes. That little question of how is your day going can make a world of a difference. But
you've got to be positive. You've got to have positive energy. The reason that they're not is because they're avoiding difficult conversations and it's weighing them down. And then they're not presenting positively to everybody else because they've got this weight. It feels like a physical weight.
It is a physical weight. And you are the head of the practice. The dentist is the head of the practice. So when we see you upbeat and we see you happy and ready to go, we want to do it for you. We want to make your practice successful. So kind of being more personable sometimes.
Yeah. And
asking how the day is going is is key. That little question is could mean the world to one of your employees.
Yeah. And sometimes I talked about emotional manipulation by employees. I think it sometimes happens by the practice owner too, where, oh, we're slow this month. I'm going to treat everyone like crap because the business isn't where I want it to be. I'm going to be like an immature drag. And then that negativity carries on. You're not going to get more out of people by guilting them or making them feel bad or making them feel anything negative. It is your responsibility as a practice owner and leader to make a conscious daily effort to be positive. And that's probably the hardest thing you're going to do in your day.
It is. So, I mean, setting those expectations, being upbeat, being happy, realizing that, you know, you have a practice, like some people would kill for it most of the time. And even if you're working toward it, these are great steps to take so that when you do own your practice, you can be the most successful that you can be.
Last question. Would you ever come back to dentistry?
This is the loaded question of all loaded questions. Right now, no. Right now, I am happy where I'm at in my life. The stress is much less, and I am grateful for that. I felt like I aged myself 10 years for
you look great.
But who knows? Is there days that I miss it? Yeah, horribly. I miss it horribly. But right now, I'm content and I'm happy.
Yeah, but if you met the right employer, you would probably try it again.
I would probably try it again. I have found that small practices are my niche. I have a friend who is all corporate. He loves corporate. That's all he wants to do. That's what he knows. And he kills it. It's not my thing. I like the small, tight-knit family, even though we're probably going to be dysfunctional at some point. But when there is a smaller group of people and we can all be on the same page, that well-oiled machine cannot be stopped.
There's nothing like it. It's great. So anyways, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being so vulnerable and honest with me and sharing this information. And for those of you watching, to get more great information, follow our podcast, Dentistry's Growing with Grace. That's Dentistry's Growing with Grace. Or feel free to reach out if you're looking for marketing services to Identity Dental Marketing. Our website is identitydental.com. And I will see you next time. Thanks so much.